So we are now recording, and the recording along with the deck from tonight and the contents of the chat window will go up on our website a little bit later on this evening. We have quite a bit of material, so I will pass it over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck. And Alan, you have to unmute yourself.
There we go. Okay, thank you, Chris. And to start off with, we have a follow-up from last week. I was bemoaning the fact that sometimes disk cleanup when you're running on Windows system files seems to take forever. And since it's supposed to be deleting junk files, I'm never quite sure why that would be. Chris mentioned that he thought it was something to do with compressing system files. I thought that sounded weird, so I did a Google search and I came across this blog, which is Raymond Chen apparently is a Windows developer, and the blog is on the DevBlogs Microsoft site, so it's probably legitimate. And he basically asked the question, why does disk cleanup take so long and consume so much CPU time? So he basically says that the cleanup process is doing a couple of different things. First of all, it performs a deep clean on Windows system files. And he says it's the equivalent of a DISM command. And DISM, if you don't know, I didn't know, is the Deployment, Image, Servicing, and Management tool. So that kind of sorts out a whole bunch of system files. And then it also will compress any operating system files of note that are uncompressed. And what he says is that the compression process that they use uses a lot of resources and takes a long time. And they do that in order to make the decompression fast. So his bottom line is, if you read the blog entry, the disk cleanup process is really trying hard to free up disk space for you, and that's why you're running it. So make yourself a cup of coffee and have a nice day, because it's going to take a while, whatever you do.
But the good news is that it can really clean up a lot of disk space. So if you check on your system, you might find that there's over 10 gigabytes that it can clean up.
Oh, yeah, and if you do it immediately after a feature update, it's almost guaranteed there's going to be 4 or 5 gigabytes in just the backup of the old system files in case you want to roll back. So, yeah, you're right. There could be lots and lots of space to recover. Okay, that's my rant. Now we're in for one from Chris.
Yeah, my rant for the day. So the last rant I had was about their scroll bars and how they by default hide them and take away perfectly good visual cues. And here's another visual cue that they decide that is not important. So I came across this when I was looking at the latest Windows Insider build for Windows 11, and they were touting this new feature that when you do Alt-Tab, which brings up a list of your running programs, and it highlights what your current running program is, and they were touting the fact that the highlight around that box or that app window is now taking it from your accent color. And so they were making a really big deal about this, and I thought, well, that's kind of strange. It's nice enough, but, you know, I wouldn't make a big deal about it. And if you hit next, you'll see that in previous builds, like certainly in Windows 10, it just highlighted it with a white box, and all the other boxes were not highlighted at all. So it was really, really easy to pick out. It wasn't using your highlight color, but it was still really, really easy to pick out which of the boxes was currently active. If you release the Alt-Tab, that's the window that would come to the foreground. So next. So what's the accent color all about? Now, if you go to Settings, Personalization, Colors, choose your accent color, you can actually set it. And in actual fact, the bottom box, look at that first where it says Select. And it says if you show the accent color on the following surfaces. So you can select either or both of these to have it either for your start button and the start menu, the taskbar and the action center. And then separately, you can have it for title bars and window borders. So it turns out that if you choose a color, so if you go in the, going back to the left side, I highly recommend if it's selected, you deselect the option to automatically pick an accent color from my background, because if your background changes, then all of a sudden your accent color is going to change, and I hate inconsistency and things like that. So I say deselect that and then pick an accent color that you want. And in my case right now, I've been running green as my accent color, but you can choose whatever you want. So the user choice for the start menu itself, as well as the taskbar and the action center, all work very well. They do follow whatever it is you pick for an accent color. Unfortunately, title bars and window bars, window borders, not so much. So next. So this is the way things should appear. So I have three application windows on the screen. So I have my photo editor, I have my logo showing there, and I have a text editor. And at a glance, I can see that if I start typing, my keystrokes are going to go into TextPad because it's got the accent color. So that's the active window. And the other two windows have white title bars, which tells me that they are not with the focus. And so any keystrokes that I give are not going to go there. And if you do want keystrokes to go there, I have to click on the application window or Alt-Tab to it or something else to make it the window that has focus. So that's the way it should be. So polite programs, here's a bunch of polite programs. All of these have the focus. Okay, so I have OnOne Photo Raw, my photo editor. I have LibreOffice. I have TreeSize, and I have Sumo. And all of them, when they have the focus, they actually follow the Windows orders for what will be the accent color. When they, all of these ones act the same way, when they don't have the focus, they have a white title bar. So they work correctly. Microsoft Office, on the other hand, hijacks the accent color in the title bars. So I have up here Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and Outlook. And all of them are up on screen, and all of them have different colored, none of which are my accent color. And Microsoft has arrogantly decided that they know better than I do what color is best for my title bars. And if you look at that and you say, okay, if I start typing, where are my keystrokes going to go? It's really, really hard to tell. I'll give you a hint. Well, I'll tell you. In this case, it would go into Outlook, because if you look really, really carefully, you'll see that the typeface on Outlook for the title bar is slightly brighter and more enhanced than the other ones. That is the only way you can tell which of those programs has the focus.
Yeah, sure it is.
Yeah, and this is, I don't know how the Office team gets away with this, you know, that they will just decide they're not going to follow the rules for following the accent color for title bars and window borders. So next.
Stuart said, it's a good thing Microsoft doesn't control our traffic lights.
That's for sure. Okay, next. Okay, so I went on to the Feedback Hub. And I made a suggestion, and I said, will someone on the Windows team please talk to the Office team, get them to respect the accent color? And I said that I hate it when Microsoft thinks it knows better than I do what the title bar should appear as. And all the time, you know, Word will be blue, green will be for Excel, PowerPoint will be red all the time. And it used to be that I could count on using the color of the title bar as a visual indicator of which program has the focus. If you agree, then you can upvote my suggestion. I don't know if it'll do any good, but you could use that URL there to upvote on it. And I don't have that on my clipboard right now. I'll paste it in a minute. So there are some semi-polite programs. So they follow a little bit of things, but not all the way. So Google Chrome is a good example. So the window with the focus follows the accent color. If you have a window up there and it doesn't have the focus, so it's not the active window, it's the same color but a paler version of it. Microsoft Edge does that too. And I say this week because it seems like Microsoft Edge, they change that on an ongoing basis. They make changes to the user interface on it. Next. Ease Us to Do Backup is a really weird one. I mean, the one in the top left, I mean, where's the title bar? I mean, it's the title bar isn't separated from the rest of the application window. There's a weird shadow around the whole application window. It definitely isn't following the color for accent color. So it's really bizarre. Opera basically does a similar thing, or actually it's one of the worst, where all title bars are light gray, whether they have the focus or not. And Firefox does the same thing. They have all the title bars, they're light green, no matter what your accent color is set to, and no matter whether it's got focus or not. So you have no way of telling whether you know that window has focus or not.
Okay, that's everything, Chris. I don't see anything else in the chat. So if you want to put that
I'll get
URL
in.
No, everybody can sign on and update your,
everybody can upload it.
Complain to Microsoft.
Nobody has upvoted it yet in the Microsoft community, and it's been up for a couple of weeks now. So,
So actually, Tristan now has a comment. He says it seems to depend if the Windows application is Windows only or cross-platform. It's likely to save on coding resources.
Yeah, right. I think Microsoft. I think Microsoft should enforce it on applications so that no application can override it at all. And it could control the title bars. And It used to be that's what they did. Going back to previous versions of Windows, they actually did that, and they actually let you control the title bar color for non-active Windows, and you could set it to something other than white. Not so with Windows 10, and I don't know when they got away from this, but definitely all versions of Windows 10 have had this problem.
Okay, so the URL is now in the chat window, so everybody can click on that and vote up Chris's rant. And by next week, we'll have a follow-up to say that it's been changed across the board.
Yeah, right. If the Office team would be told to follow the rules, I would love it.
Okay, moving along. Recently, we've had a whole bunch of Android applications in this series of smart apps. And I just want to remind everybody that it doesn't have to be an Android app. It can actually be a Windows program. As it says here, it can be a program for the PC. And in fact, I have an example because I had a need recently to look at finding duplicate photographs in a couple of different folders. And I came across this program called Duplicate Cleaner, which it turned out did more or less what I wanted quite well. Now, previously, I've used a program called Awesome Duplicate Photo Finder, and I did a review of this in the newsletter. And this is kind of the interface. It works really well. You basically just add a couple of folders to the top window there, and then just say start search, and it will basically find duplicate photographs. And the problem is, if you've got 100 photographs in a folder and 90 of them are duplicated, and you want to find out which are the 10 which are not, one of the ways to do it is to delete the photographs in one of the folders, and then what's left are the differences. The problem is with this program, you have to go through each photograph individually and hit the delete key to get rid of it. And I don't think there's any way in this program to basically highlight all of the duplicates in a particular session, as it were. And so hence looking for a different program. And this is the interface for Duplicate Cleaner. This is a free version, and it's somewhat similar in that you have a you select the folder from the directory tree here, and then send it over into the area where the folders are going to be searched. And you can see that I've got one folder on my C drive, another folder on an external USB drive. And the next thing I would maybe take a quick look at is this tab here that says search criteria. Basically, it's by default, it's looking for files with the same content. So these will be exact duplicates. But you'll notice there are some other things that you can filter out. You can look for file names and dates and times and sizes and things like that. And however, if you're not really interested in that kind of thing, then all you have to do is just set up the two folders, press the start scan button, and the program will start whirring. And in not very much time, a few seconds generally, you'll get this summary pops up, and it will tell you that it's done 186 hashes. So that's the way it's doing the file comparison. It's making a hash of the file in each of the folders and then comparing the hash. So it's done 186 hashes. It's done 215 files altogether. It's found 93 duplicates, 93 groups of duplicates with 186 files that have duplicates. And it did that in, so 215 files scanned in 10 seconds. So relatively quick. And it has quite a nice interface in terms of showing you, if you just click on that summary and say thank you, it shows you the duplicate files, and it's grouped them in these so-called groups. So and then it separates the groups by the different colored bars. So you can see that in the first group here, I've got a file called 1.jpg, and then I've got another file here, which is the original photograph from the camera with an IMG number.jpg type file name. And then the second one is a different group and so on. And if you don't like the file names, then you can use this little icon over here, which will give you the thumbnail view. And so if you click on that, then it transforms the groups into side-by-side thumbnails. So now you can see the two files, which are identical, and the file names. And you've got check boxes here where you can select individual photographs. But note over here, there's a whole bunch of, there's a thing called selection assistant. And there's a whole bunch of ways to mark files. So for instance, I can choose mark by group and say, choose all but one file in each group. Remember, these are identical files. So if I had like three or four folders, I could pick just one that I wanted to retain. So if I click on that, then it selects all the files in the second folder, and it's obvious that it selected them with a check mark, and it's basically crossed them out so you know that those are the ones that it selected. And now all I have to do is go up to this icon here, which says file removal, the delete icon, the trash can. If I click on that, then it will say, well, there are 93 files marked for deletion. I can send them to the recycle bin. I can tell it to delete the files. And then it just warns me, you're going to delete 93 files. Are you sure? Yes, I'm quite sure. And there we go. 93 files have been deleted. And now I'm left with my files 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. in my first folder. Right, so this is the, as I said, this is the free version. It works really quite well in terms of identifying unique photographs, now a duplicate, exact duplicates, and then deleting one set, for example, or as many or as few as you wish. The program actually has a couple of other options. Now, we were working in regular mode. It has an image mode and it has an audio mode. And you can see that in the image mode, you could do things like find images that were rotated or flipped. And for the audio mode, you can have the same artist or the same title or something like that. However, note that each of these modes is only available in the pro version. So you have to basically buy the big cousin of the free version to get the additional features. And if you look at the website and look at the comparison between the two, between the free program and the different pro versions, you find the free program will do find and remove duplicate files, but the pro versions do things like find and remove folders, find non-duplicate remaining files, which is what I was kind of doing by getting rid of the duplicates in one folder. And then it has some other things like, you know, different themes and virtual folders and all kinds of wonderful things. Now, one of the things it will do is it will find images, for example, with or files with similar content. The free version only finds, for example, images that are exact duplicates. And if you have the pro version, you can find things which are 80% similar on that kind of thing. And if you're interested in all those, there are many more features in this. There are pages and pages of additional features that you don't get with the free version. If you're interested in that, then the pro version will essentially cost you $52 Canadian. And so then it's a question of whether it's worth it to you or whether you can find a different application altogether, which will do what you want. So that's my current experience with duplicate file fault finding. So now we have another Android app, and this is a contribution from Stuart, who's just unmuted his mic and going to tell us about Google Pay.
Yes, so it was the question was asked a few weeks ago, actually, if anyone was using contactless paying with their Android, and the question was met with a resounding silence. So I figured this might be worth talking about. I have the Google Pay, the first one, GPay, on my device. And my phone is capable of NFC or near field communication contactless payments, but I haven't used it for that yet because as an old fart, I'm still used to just whipping out my card and I have my cards all handy and ready to go. And it's faster than taking out my phone. I suppose if I was 30 years younger, I would be whipping out my phone. But where I do find this really useful is Google Pay not only stores your payment cards, it will store your loyalty cards as well. So your Starbucks card, your Canadian Tire Triangle membership card, everything that gives you points and accrues whatever it is you're collecting at various retailers, they can all be plugged into this as well. So it's a lot easier to carry the phone and find your loyalty app on this than it is to carry 100 loyalty cards and dig them out. But that seems to be the limitation of the program so far, just direct payments to retailers and loyalty card scanning. Now, I was reading somewhere, one of those wonderful publications that talk about computers and such. And they say, well, there's Google Pay as well. I said, Google Pay? I thought I had Google Pay. Well, as you can see from the slide, there's another Google Pay. And it kind of looks like an infinity symbol that dropped acid in the 70s and never came back. So that's how you can tell the difference between it and the original Google Pay. And this one is going to add the features of peer-to-peer payments, similar to what PayPal apps and other financial tech apps already do. So you can just tap your phone to somebody else's phone and make an exchange money or do whatever you like. However, it's not available in Canada right now. When I read the article, I clicked on the link in it, and it took me to the Play Store. And the app was there, but it said, oh, not available to any of your devices, and it wouldn't let me add it to my wish list. So I looked in the URL, and of course, sometimes when you click on a link about an app and it takes you to the Play Store, it's a regionally specific link that you're getting. And this one was, it's at the very end of the long URL. It said GL equals US, which means United States. And in the past, we've run into this, and I had to do was edit the US to CA, and boom, I would get the Canadian version of whatever app I was looking at. Well, I did that, and then it just flatly refused to acknowledge that I was even allowed to look at this. I could look at the app, but I couldn't install it or save it, or it wasn't available for anything. So I imagine it's a pretty fresh version of the Google Pay evolution, and it's only in the United States at the moment. And it may be useful to people that want to use a digital wallet. That's about all I've got to say.
Okay, thanks very much, Stuart. I guess we'll wait and see if that comes to a Google Play Store near us soon. Chris, I noticed there's a bunch of chat about the Microsoft conspiracy. You want to say anything about that?
Yeah, actually I do. I don't know why it's happening. People, if they click the link that I provided for going to the feedback hub and where you can then do an upvote, they're getting an error message saying that their account doesn't have the right, my account does not have access to that feedback. And I don't know what caused that. I'd like other people, if they could try, just go to the feedback hub. And then when you get there, there's a search box at the top. And if you just type in accent color without the U, so accent color should be respected, and hit enter, and it should come up with a number of suggestions. The first, when I do it, there's a whole bunch of them in there that actually have it, but I don't see mine. Actually, that's interesting. I don't know why mine isn't showing up.
Bill Van Dyke says, does it make a difference if you're logged into a Microsoft account?
Well, I think you have to in order to use Feedback Hub. It has to be a Microsoft account. But, I mean, any email address can be a Microsoft account. So,
if you just click on the link that you gave, does it ask you to log in?
Well, I mean, I'm usually logged into a Microsoft account. But actually, if you do a search, the first suggestion should be mine.
Accent color should be login.
It
didn't ask for a login.
Okay. If you do a search there, once Feedback Hub loads, if you do a search for accent color without the U, should be respected. The first suggestion is actually mine, if it does come up the same.
Which spelling of color?
C-O-L-O-R.
Because I'm seeing number was C-O, with the British spelling of color, or the Canadian, whichever.
Yeah. I put it in without the U because I figured that there are more people that are using American spelling on things and it would show up in more cases. So that's why I did it with just C-O-L-O-R. But if you type in accent color should be respected, when I do that search, the first one that comes up is mine.
Uh, search should show accent color like other parts of Windows do?
No. It should come up with accent color should be respected by all programs. I don't know what's happening. That it's people searching for my suggestion. It's not coming up. I search for it. It comes up, and it has one comment, which was a comment I added to it, and that's it. So I don't know why it's.
I think you're on the troublemakers list.
Mm-hmm. Could be. Maybe they flag anything that they don't like as being not viewable by anybody other than the author. I don't know. I might dig into this a little bit more and see if I can figure out why it's not showing up. If I do find anything, I'll report back.
Bill Chris? Van Dyke says you've discovered a new feature.
Yeah.
Chris, is it search should show accent color like other parts of Windows do?
That's not the one that I put in.
Why don't you put the title of your post in the chat window and the link, and then maybe people can try it again, and then we'll come back to it at the end.
Yeah, okay.
All right, so let's move on because there's another interesting problem coming up. If anybody has any bright ideas, feel free to chime in. The issue is basically a change that Google are going to make on May the 30th. And you may have seen this message. I certainly got a message from a friend. And it says, on the 30th of May, you may lose access to apps that are using less secure sign-in technology. So this is to log into Google and hence to access things like Gmail. So my questions are, will I be able to access Gmail with a browser? Can I use Thunderbird on my computers, typically on my laptop? And also, what about K9, which is my email client on my smartphone, an Android smartphone? So I started looking at this issue, and if you go to one of the Google account help files, and this tiny URL link will get you there. Google basically says that they're trying to keep your account secure. And so starting at the end of May, they're not going to be supporting third-party apps or devices. And so that's things like email clients and possibly your computer, which ask you to sign into your Google account only using a username and a password, which is basically what we're all doing right now. So something is going to change, and you won't be able to use just a username and a password. And they say, if an app or a site doesn't meet our security standards, whatever they are, then Google may block you from getting into the account. And if the app or the operating system on your device, i.e. Thunderbird, for example, is out of date, then updating it to the latest version might allow you to use the app. And that's about as good as it gets from Google. I couldn't find anything else on Google's website that gave me much better information than that. However, I did do some other searches and I found some other things. And one of the things that they tell me is that basically what's happening is that Google is moving to the use of open authorization, and the current version is 2.0. And this is an industry standard, and it basically provides, it says, specific authorization flows for web applications, etc. So it's the authorization thing, which is the kind of new piece in the puzzle here, as it were. So as far as I understand it, and if anybody knows any better than me, then feel free to correct me. Right now, we're using a basic authorization process. So here you are on the left as the user, and you're trying to log into your account. And basically, Google is asking you for some login credentials. And so you have to have a valid user ID and a password. And once you've given it that, then you have access to all of the Google services. So you can get into Gmail, you can look at contacts. You can change things in your profile. When we go to open authorization, this will change a little bit. So instead of having just a user ID and a password, you'll have to have what they call an access token. And the token has a whole bunch of different things burnt into it. There is some identification information. So effectively, there's a user ID and a password there, which says that this user is you and you're an authorized user. But it also has some authorization information. And this token will only authorize you as the user to access services which are specified by this token. And so, for example, you may have a token that only gets you into Gmail. So you can't, using the same token, access your profile, for example. And I guess this is more secure because it stops the bad guys. If they've got one token, they can't get into other places or something like that. And the other thing it has is it has some lifetime information burnt into it. So the token that you have is only good for an hour or a week or a year or whatever lifetime the token authorizer has decided that he will give you. So you need some way of accessing tokens and then using them in your applications. So the next question is, I'm not sure about browsers. As far as there's no information that I can find about browsers. Chrome is a Google browser. If you want to access a Google account, one would think that you could do it by using Chrome. And there's a whole bunch of Chrome lookalikes, so I'm sure they will all be able to access Google too. But as I say, I haven't been able to find anything which says that using a browser will get you onto Google in June. So that's yet to be seen. This is a question and answer from the Mozilla support site, in Thunderbird in particular. And the question was, he got this Google notice that access is going to be disabled for third-party apps. Does that mean you won't be able to use Thunderbird? And the reply came back from this user who's a so-called diamond product expert. And he says, and this is where I got the open authorization link from, you need to use an email client that will support open authorization. And the latest version of Thunderbird should be okay. So if you look around the web a bit more, you find this link, for example. And this is a little bit different. It's basically saying, if you want to use Thunderbird to access Gmail, Google is going to tell you that you have to allow insecure apps. And that's the situation right now. You can't use Thunderbird with Google unless you go to the Google security settings and you turn on and allow insecure apps. Because as far as Google is concerned, Thunderbird is not a Google product, and therefore it must be suspect and possibly insecure. So you as the user, account holder, you have to authorize that. However, he says, since version 38, Thunderbird has supported open authorization with Gmail. So you don't have to enable insecure apps. And the inference there is you don't have to enable insecure apps because you can enable open authorization too. So that's been the case since version 38. And for anybody who's not using Google, the current version of Thunderbird is 91.7. So clearly open authorization has been available for quite a while. So the next thing I find is that there's a whole bunch of things that you probably are going to need to do. And that's is that you're going to need to change the authorization in order to send a mail. You may have to remove saved passwords if you've done such a thing. And then you're going to have to restart Thunderbird to make that work. Log into Gmail and your Google account, provide that permission to use Thunderbird, and turn this allow insecure apps off because now you're using open authorization and you don't need, and Thunderbird is now a secure application, so you don't need to allow insecure apps. So first of all, how do we change the authorization for sending emails? Well, you need to go to your account settings, and you need to find the server settings which you're using for Gmail. And the Ottawa PC User Group, the board of directors, are using Gmail as a communications medium. So we're using Gmail through G Suite. So I have in my Thunderbird client, I have an entry for my email address with the PC User Group. So if I look at the server settings, then you can see that here is the IMAP Gmail server address. And down here, you can see the authentication method is set to OAuth 2, Open Authorization 2.0. Now, that's kind of interesting because I don't have any recollection of changing that authorization. I'm sure when I set this thing up, it was normal password, i.e. a user ID and a password. So somehow, by accessing Gmail using Thunderbird, I'm sure Google has turned this on automatically. I certainly don't remember doing that. Now, this is Thunderbird, and this is the client that I use. I'm told that, for example, Microsoft Outlook will do the same kind of thing. It also supports authorization. The question for all you people is, well, if you're using an email client, which client are you using, and does it support Open Authorization 2.0? And we'll see in a little while that that is actually important. And the other thing you might have to do is you might have to go to the settings for the outgoing server. So on Thunderbird, that's Tools, Account Settings, Outgoing Server, and Edit. And then it will bring up this panel right here. Now, you see that I've blanked out the server name. And the reason for that is because I also have my own domain. So I have a web hosting service, and typically that's the server I use for my outgoing email. So I have incoming email on my domain and on my Gmail account, essentially, but I only send outgoing mail through my domain. So in my case, I don't need to switch this to open authorization because I'm not using the Gmail outgoing server. So here you can see, for example, that my web host, I use a normal password, which means that my web, my mail server needs to see the login credentials, my user ID, and my password, and Thunderbird will send those along as required. So that's basically changing the authorization for sending mail. So now the next thing is, do we have to remove old or save passwords? If we do, then we need to go to the Tools menu, find Preferences, go to the Privacy and Security area, and find this thing which says Save Passwords. And when we click on Save Passwords, then it brings up a whole bunch of, if you've saved login information in the client, then they're all saved right here. So for example, here's the Gmail account, and I could click on Remove to remove the passwords if I so desire. And if you can't remember what they are, then you can show passwords over here. And go, of course, you're going to have to do that with your particular client if you don't use Thunderbird. So now the next thing we need to do is restart Thunderbird, and then we've got to go and look at Google account. So we need to look at providing permission, maybe, if we haven't already done that, and then turning off this insecure apps. So if you go to your Google account, on the main page, if you scroll down, you'll come to this box right here, which says third-party apps with account access. And you can see that one of the programs that has account access is Thunderbird. And right now, Thunderbird has access to Gmail because I'm using Thunderbird to access Gmail. So clearly I've had to set this. But if this didn't have access, then I could turn it on by saying manage third-party access. It would bring up this window over here, and I'd have something else here, enable or something rather than remove, and I could make Thunderbird make it have access to Gmail. And then the final thing that we need to worry about, I think, is this business of less secure apps and these insecure apps having access to our Google account. So again, if you look at the main security screen, scroll down and you'll find this window which says less secure app access. Right now on my system it's turned on because originally I'd set Thunderbird to use a normal password. And so I had to turn on because Google thought that Thunderbird was possibly an insecure app. And although it seems as though it set up the open authorization automatically, it hasn't turned off less secure app access. But that also may be because I've got other applications, as you may have noticed there. I've got other applications which are accessing the account. This thing, NVIDIA SIF, is actually an application that runs an Android television box. It's the NVIDIA, whatever it's called, I've forgotten. It's an Android box that accesses television programs. And then Updraft Plus is a backup system for website files, and it gets access to Google Drive so it can save the files there. So these two things probably don't use open authorization, so that's probably why I need to have insecure apps turned on. If you read the text here, it says your account will be vulnerable because you allow apps that are less secure to sign in. And then here's that warning. On May the 30th, this setting will no longer be available. So you won't have to turn it off, I don't think, because it won't be available. And if you click on learn more, then we go back to square one. And here's that message where it tells you that Google is no longer going to support third-party apps which don't meet their security requirements. So if you are using other apps to access Google accounts, you might want to start checking. You've got lots of time. We've got a couple of months yet before anything's going to happen. But you might want to start checking what you might need to do. And I see Stuart's reminding me that my NVIDIA box is called an NVIDIA Shield. Thanks, Stuart. All right, so here's the next issue. The other app that I use is an Android app. I use K9 Mail, and I do the same thing. I access the same two servers, my own web hosting, my own web mail server, and also my Gmail server, the club's Gmail server. On the support site for K9, there was a similar question. Is it possible to include open authorization 2 for an authentication in incoming server? And again, he's concerned about a Gmail account. And here's a reply from this guy, Monkey Matt. And you'll see if down here that Monkey Matt seems to be some kind of developer because he's got this string of stuff here which says pull request, which is programming K9 on GitHub. So he's probably working on this as a developer for this open source program. The thing he says is that people have been trying to work on open authorization but it hasn't been properly implemented yet. So it's basically working on a developer willing to dedicate the time to continue the implementation. So my hope is that they find one or more developers to work on that in the next couple of months, and K9 will still continue to work, or the updated version of K9 will continue to work for me on my Android smartphone. Otherwise, I'm going to be looking for a different app, I guess. Anyway, there we have. That's all I know about all I know and what's all fit to be printed. And again, I just remind you that if you use different apps to access Google accounts, May 30 is the deadline, and we're not sure what's going to happen, I guess. I think things are going to stop working, so you probably want to look at things before then.
This is interesting because you brought up a number of issues there, Alan, that I hadn't considered beyond email itself, because there could be other apps like you have that are considered insecure apps. You know, and I have ones as well. I have my Google Assistant on Lenovo Smart Clock. I have Free File Sync is accessing my Google account. KeePass to Android, Password Safe is doing that, as well as Mozilla. And so I'm wondering if all of those are going to stop working, you know, come May 30th. I certainly hope that that's not going to be the case, but I haven't heard anything from other people screaming about this and saying that, you know, is it going to be fixed?
Yeah, well, I suspect there's going to be a lot more. There's going to be a follow-up, I'm sure, a follow-up or two, I should think. So there's a note in the chat, Jeff, saying he believes Outlook 2016 and any later versions will be fine. Well, anybody that's using Outlook, that's a good note.
Yeah. Something else I noticed in Thunderbird, because while we were prepping the deck for tonight, I went through all of this process myself in Thunderbird, and I noticed that for incoming email for the IMAP server, it had switched by itself, presumably, as well as Alan had, where it was OAuth 2, but my outgoing server was still set to username and password. And so I switched that to OAuth. I also went in to remove the saved passwords, and I removed the ones that were there. After I had logged into Thunderbird, I ended up with new ones in there that were actually looked like they, let's see, the provider was now OAuth:/accounts.google.com. So it still does save your password in Thunderbird, but it does it under a different protocol now, which presumably is, you know, the secure way of doing it. I don't know. this is a really bit of a puzzle, and I just hope that somebody else is looking at the issues, because I don't know how to solve the fact that, you know, my Google alarm clock, my Google Assistant on my Lenovo smart clock is all of a sudden going to stop working on 30th of May. I don't know.
Yeah, there seems to be a dearth of information on the web about this right now. And hopefully we'll get more information as we go along.
Yeah.
So Lawrence is saying he has a Real Link camera app that he can't use with Google. There's a chat that Google is supporting an older version, and Real Link is a newer version with OAuth 2. Resurrected Yahoo.com old email, and that works with the extra authentication.
Yes. So that's it in a nutshell. That Real Link claims that Google's using an older authentication method. Yes, that seems to counter what we're talking about here, but that's what was said. And anyways, one other fellow from a couple weeks back says, well, just use a Yahoo account. And that's what I did. I resurrect the Yahoo account. It, of course, had me register the app, which I did, and boom, I got my email notifications whenever there's a camera alert.
Okay, and Karen's asking, could we repeat, is it just Gmail or does it also include contacts and calendar and Google Drive? Now, all of the above, Karen, because it's all linked to your Google account. And it's the Google account which is going to need the authorization token. Okay, we've got another 5 minutes, and now it's that time of year when we say, any other questions? And I'm going to stop screen sharing for a minute. And that will bring up everybody's happy faces. So now you can all raise your hands and wave and open your mics and ask questions and all kinds of things.
I have another rant on top of Chris's Microsoft rant. And the latest version, now I'm using the corporate version, Microsoft 365. It used, you know, are the toolbar that we love to hate with the newer version of Office. Well, Microsoft has given us another reason to hate it, because you cannot hide it. You have a choice. Full screen mode, which is, hey, let's take up your full screen on a 32-inch monitor, a bit too much. Or you show the tabs only, or always show ribbon. Oh, hang on. Oh, there it is. Show tabs only. Never mind.
Tabs only is my rant.
I take back my rant. I wasn't expecting. So I was expecting to see the old version, which was, I think, compress the toolbar or something like that. Now it's, they changed it to show tabs only. All right. Well, I take it away. I take it back. Microsoft probably did one thing right.
Okay, anything else, anybody?
I could mention that I like Stuart's presentation on the phone pay. I was at Ottawa Fastener about a month ago, and there was two nice girls at the cash. And the customer before me or two had gone through and wanted to pay by phone. And one of the girls had the payment applied to her phone. She was the cashier. So she was a little bit on edge right when I went through. Well, I paid with my credit card, but anyway, the payment went through for the customer on her phone, and they fixed it up, but it was kind of funny.
Maybe I have a little question regarding that feedback. When I did enter the link that Chris indicated, they asked, do you want to enter, open that feedback hub thing?
Yep.
But I tried to search for the link itself in the app. I could not find anywhere where I could enter the link or the code in it.
No, once you're in the feedback hub, like entering the URL is it's a web browser type thing. It's going to open up your web browser, and your web browser is going to try to open up feedback hub, and you'll get that prompt saying, do you want to go to the feedback hub? And it passes the actual link to the page where, you know, my particular rant was actually at, but for some reason, nobody has access to it. So they get, you know, at that point, you get that error message saying that whatever it was that, I forget, it's in the chat there, but saying basically that your account doesn't have access to that particular item. But I have no idea why it does that. Yeah. And so
for what it's worth, you're not the only one who has that problem, because I found one feedback that's pretty similar to what you were asking for. So,
okay. Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not a Microsoft MVP anymore, so I can't go through the back door to try and figure out what it is that's causing that problem. I'm one of the unwashed masses now, so I have to queue up with everybody else to try and figure out why things aren't working. I can't go to Microsoft directly on it. Frustrating.
Karen has a question in the chat about Android. She says, is anyone using Google Lens and now is now having a problem? I receive a message that says, Thanks for updating. Lens will be available soon. Please try again later. And this has been the message for months.
I just loaded the app on my phone, and it loaded fine. Smiled and winked at me. Said, hello, sailor.
Sorry, that's the Lens app?
Yes.
Oh.
She may want to try deleting the app and reinstalling it. Or...
Yeah, Bob Gowan says it still works for me, so that might be an option. Karen, maybe delete the app and reinstall it.
Yeah, I think I used to have it, and I removed it because I wasn't using it. I was running out of space, but I hadn't used it for a long, long time.
Hi, everybody. Thanks. It's Karen. I'm just wondering if my operating system is too old and won't support it now because I've tried all of that. So that's what I'm wondering now, if that's a problem.
Yeah, that could be. Do you know what version of Android you're on?
Yeah, I'm on 9.
Oh, that's pretty recent.
Same here, Karen. My phone's on 9. No problems.
Crap, I was hoping that would be the solution. Now I don't know what the solution is because I've tried all of that. I've had a lot of craps today, and I'm not pleased about the Google thing, you guys.
Android tech support, there you go. Okay, I don't see anything else in the system there, so let's move to the wrap-up. So I just remind everybody that our Tech Talk series is coming up, and we're going to start with a spring cleanup session on April the 4th, that's a Monday at 7 o'clock. And this, of course, is free for OPCG members. If you're a member of the club, then all you have to do is register. And we're asking $20 for anybody who's not a member, but that includes a one-year membership, which is, by coincidence, worth $20. So, anyway, if you want to join in, you have to register because we're only going to be giving out the Zoom link to people who've registered and or paid. Also, we do have a special offer for non-members. If you're not a member, we're offering 2-for-1. So you can buy one membership for $20, and you'll get a second year absolutely free. Plus, you'll be able to go to all the tech talks. So it's a really good deal. And for anybody who is a member, I will just remind you that you do not need to renew your membership. You don't get a 2-for-1 by paying us $20. The board has already decided that we will extend everybody's membership. Anybody who's a member as of March the 31st this year, which is anybody who's a member at this minute, anybody who's a member on March the 31st will renew your membership for an extra year, and there will be no renewal fee. So please, 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 don't send me $20 by PayPal, because then I have to ask you what you want to do with it. And then the final thing just went away. There we are. Next session is going to be next Wednesday, which is March the 23rd. Right now, the cupboard is almost bare. I have one item promised for next week, which should be interesting. But if you have questions or you have answers to all of the questions that we've raised tonight, or if you have things that you'd like to share, Windows programs or tips on using the operating system or Android apps or anything that's computer related, just send us some information to suggestion box and we'll make sure you have a spot available for next week's Q&A. So that's it for me tonight. Thanks, everyone, for attending. And as usual, I hope you found it of interest.
Thanks, folks. We will see you next week.
And Timothy says,